listening to Midsummer Murders Mayhem, the official podcast for the hit global television series Midsummer Murders. I'm your host, Nikki Chapman. Now, you may know me from the television series Escape to the Country, the RHS Chelsea Flower Show, or perhaps for those listening in the UK, BBC Radio 2. But what you might not know is I'm a huge fan of Midsummer Murders, the world's favourite detective series set in the quaint, beautiful, surprisingly lethal, fortunately fictitious county of Midsummer. Country life encompasses all sorts of English eccentrics, marvellous village fates, and a remarkably high body count. But we do not fear, for our hero Inspector Barnaby has a 100% record in solving all the murders. He is our calm in the storm and has been for several successful decades. In this podcast, I get to examine the Midsummer Murders television series in audio form, one nail-biting episode at a time. In this episode of Midsummer Murders Mayhem, we're going fishing with a talent for life. And we'll leave no stone unturned, no evidence unchecked. So if you haven't seen A Talent for Life, I suggest you do that right now. So, set in the village of Mallonbridge in the county of Midsummer, it's rocked by not one, oh no, but two murders when a former socialite is found bludgeoned to death alongside a local Casanova. Now, the main suspect, a chef, is found dead in, and get this, a walk-in fridge of his restaurant. Yes, all in a day's work, of course, for Causton CID. It begins with some wonderful moments from socialite Isabel Hewitt, played by the screen legend Honor Blackman.
Hello, Tom. Have you come to arrest me?
I'm not sure yet.
What's this about?
I rather think it's in connection with my alleged assault on Margaret Seagrove last night.
Assault? Don't you think you should have a solicitor?
No. No, Tom's not going to do anything sneaky, are you, Tom? Oh, will you join us? I think we have a couple of spare glasses.
No, thanks. Thank you all the same.
Oh, of course. Of course.
So what exactly happened outside the pub last night?
Well, you know, it was quite extraordinary. We've all heard the expression foaming at the mouth, but I've never actually witnessed it.
So you just slapped her across the face?
Yes. Well, we none of us wanted her bursting a blood vessel.
With the help of cast, crew, and devoted superfans, I'll be covering some of the most important scenes in A Talent for Life, discussing the most intriguing characters, and seeing who can spot those cameos. Helping me this week is award-winning Scottish comedian, actor, presenter, and most importantly, die-hard Midsummer Murders enthusiast, Ashley Story.
I think maybe Troy just wanted to meet the beautiful Isabel Hewitt, socialite, race car driver, fun time lady. She says you have affairs with younger men, you don't marry them. I want that on a mug.
We're also going to be hearing from author Simon Brew, who wrote the official Midsummer Murders interactive novel, Could You Survive Midsummer?
You might end up your last breath escaping from your body, but it's kind of in your hands which path you choose to take.
Plus, we'll finish things off with a round of our Superfan Face-Off quiz, hosted by Ashley and featuring contestants from around the globe.
Question number one. In this episode, sassy former socialite Isabel Hewitt has just come into a sum of money before her death. How much was it?
Ding, ding, ding. 11,000?
No.
10,000?
It's not.
Also, be sure to stick around for the end where we tie up any of those loose ends, wrap everything up, announce exactly who committed the murderous crimes, and how Barnaby solved them. So here we are. Ashley, how are you?
Good. How are you, Nikki?
Yeah, very good. I'm not being rude, but is it raining in Scotland today?
It is surprisingly sunshiny today, Nikki. I don't know what's happened. It's very unusual.
Please send it down. We have pouring rain in London. And I hope wherever anyone is listening to this, they have more sunshine than we're currently having. Before we get started, there will be a few spoilers in this episode for anyone who hasn't seen the show. Now, do you have a talent for life?
I don't think I've got as much a talent for life as Honor Blackman's character, Isabel Hewitt, in this episode of Midsummer Murders. She's fishing, she's slapping, she's driving a jagabout offy fast round the streets of Midsummer.
And she's glamorous. So glamorous.
When was Honor Blackman ever not glamorous? My whole memory of that woman is just glamour to the max.
Can you imagine having that voice? I mean, it is the voice that anyone wants that works in broadcasting. Such a great voice. But we should probably get on because you've set the scene beautifully. We're in the village of Malanbridge in the county of Midsummer. I keep stressing county because so many people think it's a village. It is a county. And there's not one, but there's two murders, isn't there?
There is, but weirdly, that's not what our detectives are sent to investigate. This confuses me no end because the episode starts with Troy and Barnaby off to interview Isabel Hewitt about having a bit of a cat fight, about slapping one of our fellow fishermen. And I'm pretty sure they're murder detectives. And it's not really their job to look out for old ladies having a wee bit of a brawl.
They just wanted to meet Honor early on. That's what it was.
I think it must be. I'm sure a uniformed officer could have gone down there and taken Isabel's statement, but no, I think maybe Troy just wanted to meet the beautiful Isabel Hewitt, socialite, race car driver, fun time lady.
Yes, who doesn't seem to be worried really about anything at all in life. She's very, very easygoing, glamorous, as you mentioned, a socialite, but yeah, laid back, I'd go as far as saying.
I don't know if that's just poshness or if that's her character, but she is so easygoing, especially when you realise her whole financial situation is up in the air. She's popping bottles of Vive Clicquot and driving about in an expensive Jaguar. I don't know how she's affording the insurance on that. She's got fly fishing as her hobby, and she doesn't seem to worry at all about the fact she has no money.
But she does have a very good friend in Quentin Rocker, the local antique dealer, who doesn't seem to be aware of her financial problems.
Well, that's the whole linchpin of this episode, Nikki, is he claims he is aware of her financial problems, but it turns out, spoiler alert, he wasn't aware, and he was heartbroken that she'd kept a secret from him, and that's what led him to be a murderer. Right, so now we know that Quentin is the murderer. Can I just say, if you watch this episode, bearing in mind Quentin's the murderer, when he has the conversations with Barnaby and Troy about how he's not the murderer, he is so cool, so calm, so collected. That man is a dyed-in-the-wool sociopath. Yeah. How he pulls off that amount of lying and red herring throwing, it's actually terrifying.
Let's listen to him in action.
Do you have any idea who might have killed Mrs. Hewitt or Dr. Goff?
Have you spoken to Isabel's nephew and that ghastly wife of his?
We've spoken to the Plunketts, yes.
Then you know all about the arrangements with Isabel's house.
We know the Plunketts own it.
The whole thing was a disgrace. They didn't mention how much they'd paid for it. No, well, I suppose they wouldn't. It was just after Isabel's husband, Kenneth, died. Isabel was out of her mind with grief, and they persuaded her she had to sell it to them. They rushed it through, paid virtually nothing for it. The furniture alone was worth twice what they paid.
They were letting her live there till she died.
Yes, but at the time, that didn't look as if it would be for very long. I'd say they were looking for a quick return.
Why? Was she unwell at the time?
She'd lost the will to live. She was fading away in front of our eyes. And then the pneumonia. Duncan thought it was just a matter of days.
So what happened?
I suggested a spin in the Jaguar. That's all it was. Frankly, I saw it more as a farewell to the other great love of her life, besides Kenneth. It was the first time I'd driven the thing. We'd just got up to the wood by Malham Cross, and she said I was driving like an Edwardian governess and she'd take over. And she did.
I like that he says you're driving like an Edwardian governess. Like, I don't think Edwardian governesses had cars.
That's very true.
Yeah, so thinking that man has killed his best friend and is delivering such a believable and stoic statement to the police.
No chink in the armour, is there? No chink in the armour.
No, nothing.
Yeah.
Though this is one of the few episodes where Troy gets it right from the beginning and Barnaby kind of tells him, oh, don't jump to conclusions, keep an open mind. And it turned out Troy was right because he did get the hunch that Quentin was the murderer right at the start.
You see, I have a soft spot for Troy. You see, Troy can do no wrong.
I know
although
you
he
do.
Does call, he does call them the Wrinklies, the slightly older generation. He calls them the Wrinklies, which I thought, I'm not sure you'd get away with that line now.
I would hope not, but I do like that he thinks that Isabel Hewitt and Dr. Goff might have been having an affair down by the river and says, maybe, I know they were getting on a bit, but you never know with those Wrinklies. Which is such a... Also, why would you be shocked that older people are having full sex lives in Midsummer? It seems to be quite a running theme.
Let's stop there. Let's stop there. It's like thinking about your parents, isn't it? There's certain things in life that you don't want to go into too much detail, and that is probably one of them. But I do feel, with this episode, a little bit sorry for the doctor's widow, Dixie, yeah. Because she had no
Dixie
idea.
Goff.
Yeah, she's got no idea what's going on.
No, I know. And the sad bit is she turns up at her friend, her old school friend, Isabel's house, and says, did you know that my husband was having an affair? And Honor Blackman's like, having an affair? He was having millions of affairs. And tells her that it's her own stupid fault for marrying a man 10 years her junior. She says, you have affairs
with
men. Which is harsh. She says, you have affairs with younger men. You don't marry them. Which is such a good line. I want that on a mug.
I'm sorry. You were saying you had no idea about Duncan's affairs?
Affairs? How many affairs?
Oh, God! I'm sorry. I just assumed you knew. We all did.
Are you saying that I've been an object of public ridicule and pity for my entire married life?
Well, darling, if you will marry a man 10 years your junior... I mean, really, I don't know what you expected. You have affairs with younger men. You don't marry them.
But we did marry. For love. At least I thought we had.
That's so sad, isn't it? So sad.
Really sad. And I think that Jane Downes as Dixie does such a great performance. She also has some of the best earrings I've ever seen in Midsummer. They're huge and super distracting the entire way through. But one of her best roles was in, it was the original Titanic film she was in, A Night to Remember. And as a young woman, the old black and white Titanic. And she's phenomenal, a phenomenal actress. I think because Honor Blackman's in this, you sometimes forget that there's also some other great actors in this episode of Midsummer because Honor is such a stalwart and legend.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can we have a little chat about the weird subplot? So in this episode, there's also just, and I think it's something very quintessentially English, there's also just like a random subplot about poachers, which seems to be a great concern for all of the citizens of Midsummer. They're always on the lookout for poachers. And we get to see it is the great Jeff Rawle, who's a fantastic British actor who was in Harry Potter. He's been in Hollyoaks. He probably doesn't want that to be his main feature, but he was in Drop the Dead Donkey, which is a great bit of British television. And he plays a concerned fisherman. Drop the Dead Donkey, fantastic. If you've never seen it, ladies and gentlemen, get your eyes upon it. But Jeff Rawle plays a sort of worried fisherman who's on the lookout for poachers.
Derek Seagrove, club secretary. What's happened here?
Mrs. Hewitt and Dr. Goff are dead.
Oh my God. I saw them both fishing just...
What?
An hour and a half ago. 100 yards upstream.
That would have been 10 o'clock.
Yes, I suppose it was, yes. Is it murder?
No question. Did you see anyone else fishing on the river this morning?
No, it was just the four of us.
Didn't see anyone?
No, not today. Look, I don't know if it's relevant, but we've had a problem with poachers of late. I saw one a couple of weeks ago across the meadows. Camouflage gear, did a runner.
He doesn't really play much of a part in the actual murder or the goings-on. He's just kind of there as a red herring, given he's a fisherman, that seems appropriate. He pops up, does a great turn. Really excited to see him. Fantastic actor.
Yeah, but he got all the night shifts, didn't he? When they're trying to check out who's poaching, they said to him, now, the good news is you're in Midsummer Murders. The bad news is we're going to need you every single night because all your scenes are by the river at 11 p.m.
And you will be doing a fight scene, which is actually kind of a cool fight scene for Midsummer. Fists fly and we watch three old men roll about near a fishing bank. It's great.
Can I just bring up the fridge in this synopsis? We're meant to be going through the plot, but there's so many subplots. The walk-in fridge death. Keith's alibi, because at one point, Keith, he does look like he could be the murderer. And he says that he actually was in his restaurant at the time. His wife throws some shade on this. And then he's found in the walk-in fridge.
It's a weird way of murdering. So we have to believe that Quentin is worried that the police are asking too many questions about his previous relationships with older women who he's been in the will of. So he decides to kind of point the finger surreptitiously at Keith Scully, the local restaurateur. So he heads down, breaks the latch on the fridge, then pushes Keith into the fridge along with his phone, turns the light out and locks him in the fridge where Keith unfortunately perishes in a bid to trick Barnaby, who is untrickable, into thinking that Keith tried to stage his own attempted murder to take the heat off him. Taking the heat off him in a fridge, didn't even realise that was a funny pun until it came out of my mouth.
Genius. But genius. You get paid extra for that.
Great.
Let's have a listen to some of the chat. Here we go.
You jammed the safety mechanism so that it wasn't noticeable from the outside. And then you just picked your moment.
I'm sorry?
You ran a bistro in London, Quentin. You'd know all about walk-in fridges. You'd know about lead linings. As you shut the door, you threw the phone in. But you made a mistake. You shouldn't have switched the light off in the fridge. Keith wouldn't want to dial a number in the dark. Not if his life depended on it.
You're saying that I murdered Keith Scully?
Yes. Just spoken to Ruth. She told me how she explained to you in the garden at Isabel's that she was worried about the timings in her husband's alibi. Do you remember that? Yes, you suggested to her that she think about it for a day or two before telling us.
So, what's that mean?
Do you know, for a moment there, I thought you killed Keith out of revenge because you thought he'd killed Isabel and Duncan, but then I realised it wasn't revenge. Keith was just a decoy. You were getting a bit too close for comfort, asking questions about your past, and you thought the best way to get us off your back was to convince us that someone else murdered Isabel and Duncan. And the likeliest suspect was Keith, with his iffy alibi and his solid motives. But he could always deny it. And that might cause us to doubt. Better off if he were dead. Couldn't deny anything then, could he? And why not make it look as if Keith were trying to fake his own murder and accidentally killed himself? That's even better.
I'll tell you what I did like. The word iffy. Now,
iffy
is a word that we use all the time, but perhaps people don't know what it means. It's a Britishism, isn't it? Iffy. It's a bit off.
It's a bit suspect, a bit fishy. Yeah.
Bit fishy, exactly. Excuse the pun. Again. Mm-hmm. The other one I noticed in this episode was Rozzers. Now, do you think everyone's going to know what a Rozzer is?
I don't think so, but I think it's one of the best scenes is when she's sitting there on the airstrip. She's just done donuts in her Jaguar and she's drinking her bottle of Vive Clicquot. And she says, oh, here's the Rozzers come to arrest me. And she's clearly got a relationship with Barnaby. That's the thing, is she knows him by name. So they've got a bit of back and forth. I feel like he's given her tickets back in the day. Maybe he's pulled her over and let her away once or twice.
But only tickets, nothing more.
Only tickets.
Only
he's not
tickets.
Kissing her. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not hoping that Barnaby is kissing her, because that would not be weird
John,
to hope
no,
that.
Not our John Nettles. No. He's a good boy. Mm-mm. He's definitely a good boy.
Ooh.
Go on.
Nikki, we also have to discuss, this is one of the weird episodes where Cully's up to something and somehow knows lots about the crime because she is once again in one of her many, many jobs. This week, she's working in a library van and also setting up
a mobile library. What a job. In between her acting,
she's in her mobile library.
Resting.
Mm-hmm. And she is also setting up a photograph exhibit for the village about their history or whatnot, but there's a funny goof in this episode where she is told to go and ask Isabel's nephew. Barnaby says, go ask Melrose, he'll have pictures of his aunt. And then at the very end of the episode, she's got all the pictures of Honor Blackman. They're beautiful photographs. And she says, oh, I got them off of Matthew. And she forgets Melrose's name and calls him Matthew. And they just keep that in.
She doesn't.
She does.
No.
She does.
Oh, my goodness. And I thought the spoiler alert was going to be right at the top when you told us all who murdered who. And then it's not. Continuity.
It's one of my favourite things.
So we should probably just finish then, shouldn't we? Because it's revealed that Quentin killed Isabel not for her money, but because, well, one, she called him a poodle, which is enough to drive anybody mad, but that he felt unimportant to her. And there's that one bit right at the very, very end where he's talking to Barnaby and he sort of opens up his heart.
She was extraordinary, like a bright jewel, and I'll never see her again. I thought that knowing Isabel was the most wonderful thing that had ever happened to me. She brought out the best in me.
That's so sad. I still can't quite work out why Quentin killed the doctor. I mean, I know he was walking with Isabel, but it's quite extreme, isn't it? Wrong place, wrong time.
Well, the doctor's doing his own fishing down the bank and he spots Quentin standing over Isabel's body. And here's the thing I think we should all learn from this, is the doctor, seeing Quentin standing with a huge chunk of wood covered in blood, decides to kneel in front of him to check if Isabel has a pulse. Ladies and gentlemen, if you ever witness a crime, don't kneel in front of the perpetrator who is still holding the weapon, or you too may become a victim.
Get out now while you can. I think that's a great synopsis. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that sums it up beautifully what happened. Quite a sad episode, I think. Quite a sad one. No winners in that
really
one.
Really sad.
Yeah.
I think it's a shame for Quentin.
Yes. Good cameos, though, on this episode, as ever.
Great. The great and good of British film and television. And, you know, it subverts the idea a little bit. Usually it's the young girl chasing after the wealthy old man. But here we had poor Quentin, loved Isabel, but she treated him like a poodle.
Poodle. Poodle. I like that pronunciation.
A poodle.
Poodle. A poodle.
How do you say it?
Poodle.
Oh, I'm sorry. A poodle.
Let's see. Brilliant. Don't worry, Ashley. We'll get you there. We'll get you there. Okay, final question. Fishing is one of the most popular hobbies in the whole of the UK by far. Would you ever take up fishing, having watched this episode?
Absolutely not. I've none of the patience for it. Also, it seems like it might be a deadly sport, so no.
In each episode of Midsummer Murders Mayhem, we like to bring in the experts. Now, sometimes we have our in-house ex-detective, other times we chat to people who are involved behind the scenes or who can answer whether it really is possible to die by the means that they do on the show. Our guest this week is someone who spent many, many hours writing the companion interactive novel for the show. It's the author, Simon Brew. So come on then, Simon. It's so brilliant to have you with us. How did the novel come about and how does it work?
It goes back to the kind of books I used to read as a child, Choose Your Own Adventure and Fighting Fantasy books. And if you've not tried them, these are the books where you read a passage of text and then you make the decision as to what happens next in the story. And so what Could You Survive Midsummer does is it takes that old formula of what's known as the game book and applies it to this nice, sedate, countryside, idyllic location where everyone seems to go around hacking each other to death with assorted garden implements. We start off with a woman called Veronica Wollaston, who's just pottering around her house. And I'm really brutal up front in the book, actually, thinking about it. I must have been in quite a bad place at the time, because she is presented with a decision to make. You make that decision. And fairly early in the book, if you make the wrong decision, you meet a very untimely end. But it is as simple as you get a couple of paragraphs of story. And then at the end, if you want to do this, you go to that page. If you want to do the other, you go to that page. And so you have quite a lot of control over where the story goes. Now, from a writing point of view, what that means is instead of me writing one story, I had to come up with about 15, 20, 25 different routes. And if you make certain choices, you're just not going to meet certain characters. You're not going to see certain events. If you make other choices, you might be able to solve the crime. You might solve bits of the crime. You might end up just your last breath escaping from your body as you look backwards and regret your life choices. But it's kind of in your hands which path you choose to take.
So did you get to have a free reign over all the different characters from the actual TV shows?
No, it doesn't directly take characters from the show. I got to come up with a whole new bunch of people entirely from scratch. But they had to fit into the environment in which Midsummer Murders works. Before I got to the really smelly and difficult bit, I wrote down a list of all these people who I would put in my village. I don't want to go deep into the characters because you will meet them in the book and then you'll get too emotionally attached and then you will weep for all time when they suddenly die out of nowhere. But that was really good fun. I could lean close to the show, but I couldn't copy the show. I thought that was quite a good place to be, really.
Okay, so this is the first of the Midsummer Murders mystery books. Do you have any more in the pipeline?
Oh, it's a secret, though, so we're not allowed to tell anyone. So it's just between us and the 7 million people who download this. I might be plotting out a further adventure that I think I'm allowed to say could be a little bit more murdery than the first one.
Good word. So even more murdery. And what do you think of this episode, then? A Talent for Life.
It's mad. It starts off with them, with them arguing about fishing. By midway, they're complaining that a bit of lobster costs £30 in a restaurant.
Bloody hell.
30 quid for half a lobster.
Well, the mussels aren't bad. A fiver.
Then some really posh bloke turns, almost gate crashes a funeral with a load of booze and brings his butler to serve it all.
May I offer my sincerest condolences? Peregrine Slade.
We thought we'd keep the service simple. Hadn't really planned on this many people.
Yes, yes, I can see. Would it be terribly forward of me to contribute a little something to Isabel's sending off? I have a couple of bottles of her favourite bubbly in the car.
Fine.
And I've brought Hastings with me. He's very keen to help out. Aren't you, Hastings?
There's tons going on here. So, I mean, it wins early by let's get Honor Blackman. Let's get Pussy Galore in. And very early in, let's have a smack in someone in the mush.
What do you mean, limited skills?
Now,
I've won the casting final 3 times in a row, and you call my skills limited? How dare you!
Is that any better?
Perfect. Perfect. I mean, I couldn't have done it better.
Oh, that was the talented, do you like what I did there? Author Simon Brew, who wrote the official interactive novel to accompany Midsummer Murders.
It's now time for your favourite segment of the show. It's the Midsummer Murder Superfan Face-Off Quiz with Ashley. Dun, 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 dun. I'm joined by Caroline in Scotland and Bobby in Philadelphia. Ladies, thank you so much for joining me. We don't have money for buzzers. You need to make your own noises. Bobby, I'll come to you first. What's your buzzer noise?
I'm going to go with a ding, ding, ding.
Caroline, what's your buzzer noise?
Do you know what? I'll go like bing, bong.
Oh, we're flying hard. Right. This week's quiz is on the episode A Talent for Life. Right. Question number one. In this episode, sassy former socialite Isabel Hewitt has just come into a sum of money before her death. How much was it?
Ding, ding, ding.
Bobby.
It's £11,000?
No. Caroline, would you like to take a swing?
£10,000.
It's not. Ladies, the point goes to Ashley. It was £20,000.
Oh, good for Isabel then.
In this economy, what are you going to get with that?
Exactly.
Right. Question number two. In which village is the episode A Talent for Life set?
Bing bong. Midsummer Barton.
No.
I don't have one.
It's Malham Bridge.
Oh.
3 points to Ashley. Question number three. Finish this sentence from Troy. Well, there's nothing says murderers have to be...
Bing bong.
Yes.
Smart.
It's a way of saying that. It's a way of saying that.
Clever?
No.
Well, there's nothing says murderers have to be...
Intelligent?
Ugh. The answer was members of Mensa.
Trust Troy to say that.
4 points to Ashley. You just get one more wrong and I've won. Question number four. When Dr. Duncan Gough's wife, Dixie, last sees him alive, she is sculpting what animal out of clay?
Bing, bing, bing. Or ding,
Bobby.
Ding, ding. Ding, ding, ding. I'm going to guess a rabbit.
Correct. You're correct, Bobby. It was a rabbit.
You saved us, thank goodness. We have hope.
Right, ladies, I'm rooting for you, but also for myself in a weird way. Question number five. While introducing himself to Derek Seagrove, instead of DCI, Barnaby accidentally introduces himself with which rank?
Sorry, bing bong, DSI.
Correct. Caroline is also on the board now. You're both on the board. One all, four to Ashley. Which luxury make of car does Isabel Hewitt speed around in?
Bing bong.
Yes, Caroline.
It is a red Jaguar.
It is a red Jaguar. It is indeed. In total, how many episodes does John Nettles appear in as Barnaby?
Not enough. That's the right answer. Not enough.
I'll take the closest number if you want to have a guess.
I don't think I could.
Have a swing and a miss, Caroline. What's there to lose? Bobby, have you got any?
70?
Right. Yeah. Bobby's gone for 70. Caroline.
Do you know I'm going to go 75.
Caroline is closest. It was 81. I love John Nettles.
Love them both.
I know. I love them both. Anyway, number nine. Arriving at the funeral with crates of champagne, Isabel Hewitt's posh London's friend is named what?
Oh.
It's such a weird name.
Is it the whole name?
Just looking for a first name there, Caroline.
I know it's not Melrose because that's the nephew.
It is not Melrose. Can I give a clue?
Yeah.
Give a clue. It's kind of related to a bird. It's a type of falcon.
Peregrine.
Yes, Bobby.
Oh, yes. You're so right.
I didn't ding, 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 but.
Oh, it doesn't matter at this point,
that
Bobby.
One together, so.
Okay, final question. A tray of which seafood is served
ding, ding, ding.
Okay, Bobby's coming straight in. It is indeed oysters. Ashley has taken a win by default on the Midsummer Murder Superfan Quiz. Go, Ashley. Go, Ashley. Caroline, Bobby, thank you so much for joining us and fulfilling my lifelong dream of winning a quiz.
That's okay. We're glad we could do that for you.
You two have been delightful. I think we should start a book group or maybe just like a John Nettles fan club and get in touch once a month and just talk about how much we fancy John Nettles.
Totally.
That sounds great.
Cool. Bobby and Caroline, thank you so much for joining us.
Now, at the end of each episode, we like to wrap up the story, revealing how Barnaby's insight allowed him to get to the bottom of the killer's motives and answer questions that have cropped up along the way. So, if you haven't seen the episode and you don't want to know just yet, then I'll turn the volume down right now. Isabel Hewitt rubbed people up the wrong way, and when she was bludgeoned on the riverbank with a large wooden stake next to Dr. Joff, it's clear that the murderer had some seriously uninhabited feelings of rage. The crime of passion resulting in two deaths is eventually linked to local antique dealer Quentin Rocker, who became enraged when Isabel belittled their friendship by insinuating he was only friends with her because he thought she had money. We come to learn that she did not and was simply keeping up appearances, as they say. Keith Scully's death almost foxes detectives after he was found dead in the walk-in fridge of his restaurant with the lock jammed and a phone inside with him. While suspicions stir that Keith may have been faking his own attempted murder to throw police off the scent, it ultimately emerges Quentin murdered him in an attempt to frame Keith for the murders of Isabel and Dr. Joff. Let's hear the moment DCI and Barnaby confronts Quentin about the murder of Isabel.
You loved her, didn't you? I don't believe you cared about the money. That's not why you killed her. And it wasn't because she conned you. And not because she didn't love you. No, it was the casual assumption that you were someone who could be bought. When you thought what was between you and Isabel was something beautiful. I think that you loved her more than you've ever loved anything or anyone. But
But when you saw this document, you realized just how fundamentally unimportant you were and always have been to Isabel.
And then Barnaby explaining it all to Troy.
Quentin Roker was our man after all.
What?
Just confessed to the murders.
All three?
All three. Seems your first hunch was the right one. See, it suddenly occurred to me that if Gwen Dobson, a local gossip, didn't know about Melrose owning Isabel's house, then it was possible no one else did either. Maybe not even Quentin. It's a long story. And of course, I couldn't have got there without Troy working out that business with the fridge. That was good work, Troy, good work. Because you thought it was Quentin from the word go, didn't you? See the lesson in all this? Always follow your first instincts.
I'll get the car, shall I?
Yeah.
Next time on Midsummer Murders Mayhem, my American co-examiner Bill Young and I will go back to season 14 with a rare bird. A row between keen birdwatchers in Midsummer in the Marsh turns nasty when their president, Patrick Morgan, is killed.
You're as likely to see a blue-crested hoopoe land in Midsummer as Concord, truth be told.
You wouldn't know the truth if it plopped on you from a great height.
We will also be delving into our archives as we hear from Jason Hughes, otherwise known as D.S. Ben Jones, about his time on the show.
We're not trying to be real. It's a made-up land. You know, these stories are fantastical, and we're not going to apologise for it.
And of course, we'll round things off with Ashley Story's superfan face-off.
The alleged sighting of which rare bird excites the village bird watchers?
Is it blue speckled hoopoe?
So close, but no coconut. It was the blue crested hoopoe, which also is weirdly my secret name on Tinder.
Midsummer Murders Mayhem is presented by me, Nikki Chapman. A massive thank you to Ashley Story and our guest, author Simon Brew. This has been an All Three Media international production with special thanks to associate producers Rachel Glaister and Gary Wolfe. This series was created by Story Hunter. The executive producer was Kirsty Hunter, produced by Shannon Delwish. The production team was Pam Muir, Ellie Abraham and Reha Moussa.